Blog Talk Radio.
Comedy of Errors continues with the Outsport podcast. It is early August, and SB Nation decided to, they decided to change their phone number for the host to call in, but didn't change it anywhere else, of course. So you look and I'm calling from my landline and calling from my cell phone. It doesn't work. And then they give you another number, and then you call in, and it won't let you change the volume of the stupid bumper music if you start the podcast late. So Jim, I am going to contact somebody at SB Nation, ask them what the hell to do, because I've finally actually had enough of this. It really is stupid.
Yeah, I told you a month ago they changed the area code of the host call-in thing, so I have to write it down each time. But it's not on the site, it has the old one. So Sid and I are Sid's calling my cell phone, which I have on mute so it doesn't interrupt our podcast, so I miss his call. There's always something going on with this podcast, but we'll straighten it out one of these years.
Always something going on. Quick hit, Jim. The NHL, a spokesperson for the NHL, has said that it is going to, quote, reassess the situation in Texas if this anti-transgender bathroom bill passes. Is reassessing the situation enough for you? Does that calm you down a little bit?
That's called covering your own ass and realizing you made a mistake after you've made it. There was some blowback to that. It got him some negative attention. And when Halliburton comes out against the bill and the NHL basically says, we're going ahead with this regardless, it's really embarrassing. I mean, it's just totally embarrassing. So now they're reassessing. They should have reassessed it from the start and simply said, we are, like you said last week, we will provisionally hold it in Texas next year, Dallas, but if the bathroom bill passes, we're out of here. Or they have until whatever, October 1st to make a decision, or else we're out of here. But yeah, just it really was a CYA moment because they didn't think this through, and it really came in conflict with all their talk about inclusion and you can play and pride and all that stuff. So it doesn't mollify me at all.
Well, and for me, the it actually makes it worse. You're acknowledging now that there's a problem, and instead of saying, if they pass this, we will move it, no. You say, if they pass this, we're going to reassess, which doesn't mean move it. If they came out and said, yeah, you know, boy, we missed the mark. If they pass it, we're moving it. That'd be one thing. They didn't say that. They said, we're gonna reassess. So for me, it doesn't take a lot of assessing to figure out you're either against discrimination or you're not. But for them, they want to just kind of reassess where they are on it, I guess.
Well, I think we have our guest on the line, right?
I'm sorry?
There is a phone call coming in. Is it from our guest?
I shouldn't be. No, not yet.
Well.
So anyhow, okay. So
there's someone, I mean, do you want to add that? There's someone calling.
Okay, well, our guest later today is our guest coming up is John Holmes, who's the front page editor for Sky Sports over in England. And I met him at the Rainbow Laces Summit back in May in Manchester, and we talked at length about what's going on there in England with homophobia and trying to combat homophobia in sports. And the reason we want to have him on is we want to talk about the power of homophobic language and from both fans and players and its effect on on LGBT people in sports, and is it actually keeping them in the closet? We hear this all the time. Like, I remember Bruce Arians, the Arizona Cardinals coach, a few years ago, said that it's the reason that people won't come out is because of fans. And Ryan Atkin is an English professional soccer referee who came out publicly today in an interview with Sky Sports, and he talked very specifically about the power of fans and their chants and what have you. And he said that people don't shout at you any louder because of your sexuality, which seemed pretty spot on. So Jim, what is your sense of this? When you talk to athletes, are they actually afraid of what fans are going to scream and yell at them?
I almost never hear the fan component anymore. The component is always their dynamic with their particular team that's the issue. You just don't hear it that they are really worried about fans. And the history has shown that fans really aren't a problem. One, it's if someone's yelling something anti-gay about, say, umpire Dale Scott, he's almost certainly not going to hear it anyway if you're in a big stadium. So unless an entire fan base is chanting something, which is not happening, they're kind of mute to it. So I don't even see that as being a really big issue. Maybe there's more so, and I want to talk to John about that, in English football, that maybe there would be more sense of something being organized, but I just don't sense that being the reason. People don't talk about fans as their hang-up about not coming out. They talk about everything else but, it seems.
Then why is it that we hear this as a reason? Why is it that we hear that? Of course, we don't hear it from athletes. Actually, we don't hear it from LGBT athletes that the fans are why. Yet we keep hearing from the media that this is a big fear of these athletes. Of course, that they're just supposing, I guess.
I think some of it is. I think in soccer there have been clearly racist chants that have been well documented and heard that were just horrific, and they were organized by, you know, groups of soccer fans. So I think the fear is that will translate into someone who comes out who's gay. At the same kind of racist, you know, or throwing, you know, they threw bananas on the field at black players. They wore, you know, monkey masks, all sorts of horrible things. So I think people are translating that to be, boy, if a gay person comes out, you're going to see something similar. And that's more in soccer. I mean, but you don't really hear it as much. You sort of hear it in passing in America as a reason, but it that's really died down the last 10 years. That used to be a big concern. I just don't hear it anymore from people.
Well, there study after study over the years has shown that fans pretty much don't care if an athlete is gay. Though there was a study that came out by somebody in the last month or so that essentially showed that only about 2/3 of fans are okay if a player on their favorite team comes out. But other studies that we've shown over the last 15 years have said anywhere 75 to like 90 or 95%. And it's always seemed odd to me that when I talk to people, not athletes, the people in the media or fans, they point to fans. It's that fans are going to be the problem. Fans are going to do this. They're going to chant this. They're going to say that. And Sky Sports asked this guy, Ryan Atkin, who was a referee. I said, are you afraid of all the chants that you're going to suddenly hear? And he's like, no, I already hear them, and they're not going to yell them at me more loudly. They're already yelling them loud enough. Like, the fans are already active enough. They're not looking for a gay referee to harass. So it seemed odd to me that the media and fans keep talking about what a problem fans are going to be, yet when they're privately polled, they say there's no problem. Certainly in the United States, I've never been to a sporting event where there were anti-gay slurs or anti-gay chants. It was an issue maybe 15 years ago. I remember something at University of Virginia, but it's all been stamped out. So I scratch my head when I hear people say this, even just asking Ryan Atkin if he's afraid of this, it's claiming that it's a problem when it just doesn't seem to be.
No, and I, again, I think the whole fan concern is a vestige of an earlier time. I think there, it would just be something that I don't think even other fans would tolerate if fans start chanting or taunting someone for being gay. I think their own fan base would turn on them. You know, that's not cool. Don't do that. And that doesn't seem to be an American issue, also, as it is maybe overseas. We've had. On Twitter, we've had, you know, the black hockey player, I forget what, Boston or Washington several years ago, was attacked kind of nastily. But you don't really hear it among fan bases so much. It seems to be that our fans can do idiotic, stupid things, but those kind of taunts don't seem to be a part of it. So I do think the question is simply one of those reflexive questions you ask just because you say, well, do you worry about the endorsements? Do you worry about the media? Do you worry about the fans? I think it's almost like you try to think of every possible interaction an athlete could have in his sport, and fans are one of them. I think the result would be that fans would be very supportive of someone on their own team, and they would boo them if they struck out with the bases loaded in the ninth inning of a playoff game, but it wouldn't be because they're gay, because they just struck out with the bases loaded in the ninth inning of a playoff game.
Have you ever heard en masse, and like you said, overseas, obviously when fans from Mexico come to the United States, we see this puto chant popping up. But that's less harassing a gay player than using a gay slur to harass people. So I'm curious, Jim, have you heard a gay slur being chanted at a gay athlete before in a sporting event?
I have not heard it personally. The only one I've ever heard of is in English soccer, where there was a player years ago, and this goes back 12, 15 years ago, where this player said he was it was someone who said they weren't gay, but everyone assumed they're gay, and the opposing fans would chant it. But I have not heard that at all personally.
Yeah. Well, we do have a caller calling in, and it's from a 918 number, so I don't know if this is our guest. Caller, you're on the line. Who's this?
Well,
goodness. Yeah,
that
see,
was a,
figured,
there was a happy fan. What was that about?
I figured that was not a call from London.
It was the second time they called in, so we're still waiting from London. But no, that was the only time I heard it, and it turned out for a player who wasn't gay, and that was their way of getting under his skin. But this was goes back, God, at least 12 years ago. But I've never heard a chant. Michael Sam, we didn't have one documented instance of him suffering any homophobic abuse from fans, right, when he was with the Rams?
No, and no abuse from teammates or opponents either. But again, you know, and it's funny because one of the ways that the media perpetuates these issues, and I talk to people, you know, someone from the media will call me and I'll tell them that I'm tired of the negative way the media portrays being gay in sports, and they're like, "What are you talking about? We're so supportive." And I said, "Oh, really?" Three-quarters of your questions have been about how difficult it is and what a struggle it is and all this stuff that's negative. Your questions reflect the negative tone with which you approach the story, that it's somehow this horrible thing to be gay in sports. And for me, Sky Sports asking the question, aren't you afraid of all of these slurs that you're going to hear and all these chants you're going to hear from the stands, to me the question perpetuates the idea. And of course the guy's like, no, it's got to be totally fine, because when I talk to athletes, it's totally fine. But the media, because they have these ideas in their heads that fans are a problem and chants are a problem for gay athletes, and so they are just going to hammer it and hammer it and hammer it and hammer it, whether it's true or not. And that's the issue that I have with it.
Well, I think the media collectively have certain assumptions about people that they kind of treat them as maybe being less sophisticated than they actually are. We even see it in political coverage where they'll assume that the public doesn't want to hear about issues, and then when you actually talk to the public, they really want to know specifically, granularly about issues. I think the same thing here, that we assume that, you know, people are going to somehow be these Neanderthals who are going to be anti-gay or anti-whatever. And it's just not borne out by any of the sort of statistics or evidence we've seen. And we have Scott France, you wrote about this a couple of days ago, the openly gay college football player from Kansas State, and you know, he said he may hear some trash talk, but he kind of heard it before anyway, just because when you play football, you hear trash talk. But it wasn't, from my understanding, specifically directed to the Ford, the fact that he was gay. It's just simply trash talk when you're an offensive lineman and you're knocking heads with the guy on defense. People may say stuff, but it wasn't like, oh, my God, they said this because they now know I'm gay. I think we have to give people and players a lot more credit sometimes than I think the media often do.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's the great point. It's not just the media that doesn't give them the benefit of the doubt. It's the front office executives and the coaches who think that the players and the fans can't handle this kind of stuff. It's we've seen this before. Remember there being a poll years ago that said, you know, and this was like 15 years ago, are you okay with gay athletes? And it was like 80%. Yep, I'm fine. Let's talk about marriage, but are you okay with an athlete being gay? Yeah, I'm fine. Is the guy next to you okay with it? And it was like 40% said yes or 30% said yes. The majority thought, no, I'm fine with it, but the guy next to me is not. And the guy next to them said, yep, I'm fine with it, but the guy next to me is not. And it's this idea that, yeah, I'm fine with it, but, oh, it's everybody else is the problem. And I think that's one of the reasons that the media blames the fans and the coaches blame the fans. And the fans are just kind of because, you know, they're beer drinkers and they're blue collar, they're easy targets. So
there are a lot of fans who are boorish, drunk idiots. I mean, no one denies that, and they say stupid things at games, and they ride players for certain stuff. But I think they ride players almost generically more so than, you know, they'll call a player fat or they'll call a player ugly or the, you know, and there's always that group in a crowd that are kind of just annoying. They're hecklers. I mean, but I think the whole gay stuff, the heckling a gay player is something we just have not seen at all in America. And I think if it did happen, it would be a big story, and I think that Dutch fan would get slammed by everybody. It would be like you're attacking someone for their race or something. It would be like almost like, wait a second, that's out of bounds. You don't do that. And so I do think that that I think sometimes the media, again, I think just don't give people enough credit for thing. And I think we do have our call coming in from London now.
I think we. Yeah, so John Holmes is a front page editor for Sky Sports. Sky Sports is the media entity that carried the story about Ryan Atkin today. John, how involved were you with that story that came out today?
Hi guys, can you hear me okay first? Yeah, I'm very
perfect.
Involved. So Ryan approached me about 3 months ago. We'd been chatting like independently through mutual friends, and he was very interested in sharing his story because he'd seen the response and the activity around the Rainbow Laces campaign that Stonewall has been running, and really good messages that the governing bodies had been putting out. And he was very keen to kind of try and help along with that as much as he could by sharing his own story, and I think it's had a real impact today.
So what level is he refereeing at?
So he's a professional referee, but it's not his full-time job. He has a day job as well, but he referees at the level just outside of the main top four professional divisions in this country. So it's actually the National League North and South, those two divisions. That's level six of the pyramid. But he is an assistant referee in the English Football League, the EFL, which means that he used to be an assistant referee, but he's now a fourth official. So that basically means that he's the kind of the fourth man of the refereeing team. He stands on the touchline and looks after the two dugouts and helps the referee and the assistant referees on the pitch. And he does that at EFL level. So that would be the second, third, and fourth tiers of the English football pyramid.
And he's the first professional referee in England to come out?
So he's the first professional football referee in this country.
Yeah, correct.
To come
yeah,
out.
We had rugby. Nigel Owen, I think, is a big guy, big shot over there.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, this is immense football. To the best of my knowledge, I don't know of any out referees in women's football on the refereeing side. There could well be some, but as far as I know, I don't think they share their stories publicly. So in that sense, yeah, Ryan's certainly like a landmark, and it's been recognised as such over here. The FA's head of refereeing has called it an important moment for the game. So I think that shows the significance.
So what stuck out to me from the interview was that when Sky Sports asked him, are you afraid of all the fans harassing you because you're gay? And he's like, no, they already harassed me. They're not going to harass me anymore because I'm gay. And we hear in the United States all the time about just the horrible behavior of football fans in the UK. Do you get a sense that gay athletes are actually afraid of being harassed more by fans, or that they're afraid of the chance that they might hear from the stands, or is like Ryan said, this is just kind of it's just kind of fabricated by you guys, and this actually is not a big fear?
I think they have fears, and as best we know, I think there's a fear of just the unknown, and I think that's something that Ryan spoke about in his piece. I think a lot of players, a lot of professional athletes, like to feel they're in control. And obviously the reactions of spectators is something that's completely out of their control. So I think it's very much that fear of just not knowing what the environment is going to be like for someone who's on the field and is an out gay athlete, and to see what the response would be. I mean, our best knowledge about what it would be like is again, like at a lower level. So Liam Davis, who I'm sure you guys probably have heard and mm-hmm. also written yeah. about yourself. Yeah, so he played for Gainsborough Trinity, which is at a level not that dissimilar to the level that referee Ryan Atkin will be officiating at. And you know, he's obviously been out playing in his community team and a couple of teams up there in the northeast of England. And you know, he's a well-known figure in his own local community. And as far as we know, there's been, you know, very low levels of any kind of abuse that have ever been directed at him as an out gay player on the pitch. And you know, it was a great moment, certainly for him, and I think to the game as well, that he played at Wembley as part of a non-league finals day last season. You know, and there was a great response to the significance of an out gay player playing at our national stadium in front of, you know, a massive crowd, certainly a lot bigger crowd than he would normally play at. So the evidence is there that would suggest that it isn't a big deal for fans, and homophobic abuse, as well, we know that it does exist, but in terms of actually manifesting itself in their behaviour directed at an individual on a match day, I think it seems unlikely.
So one of the questions that comes up in the U.S., actually anywhere, that we see institutions much more accepting and embracing of LGBT issues and people and athletes and encouraging. Fans seem not to care. The media is certainly supportive. And yet we have, like, nobody openly gay in the EPL, and nobody openly gay in the four big American male team sports. And so then I guess the question is, from your vantage point, what is still the barrier that prevents athletes from coming out at the high elite levels?
Well, I think it's a variety. It's a very complex problem. You know, I say it's a problem. It may well not be a problem for the individuals. They may well be out to teammates, to other people within their clubs and their communities, but they don't feel ready yet for whatever reason to share their stories more publicly with the media and with the world. I think there is an element of, as we say, fear of the unknown about exactly how that story will be handled. Will it be out of their control? Will the media somehow kind of twist their story? I think that would be a concern. I think there's also you know, caution around, as I say, probably the reactions of different people within the game. You know, as we know, there's such a stigma and a shame historically with being gay. You know, not just in our country, but in a lot of countries around the world. And obviously, it's you know, there are some pockets of the world where it's far, far worse. But that historic stigma and shame hasn't been shaken off in sport because of its slow progress towards inclusion for LGBT people. That's the feeling that I think that we get over here. I don't know if that's echoed as much in the US, but certainly, you know, we read with great interest the progress that you guys are making, certainly at a college level. And that's something that, you know, that gives us great hope.
So first of all, if you're listening and you're on Twitter, John Holmes is probably the closest. I told Jim, it's the closest thing to Sid and Jim in England, because there just isn't an out sports. There isn't a high school and a collegiate athletic system there. But John is doing a lot of great stuff. He's at JONBOY79. John, I saw you at the Rainbow Laces Summit in Manchester back in May, and my big message to anybody that would listen is sports actually not that homophobic. It's the homophobia in sports is way overblown. And what we need is more athletes and people in sports to come out to show how much sports has moved past homophobia. So in the last 3 months, as you've reflected on my brilliant insight, for the UK, how right or how wrong was I, and what can we look for in the coming months from either athletes coming out or leagues taking new steps of how to combat homophobia? How overblown or underblown is homophobia?
I think that there's a feeling that homophobia exists because we're not seeing great amounts of evidence to the contrary, and because we've known that homophobia has been a deep-rooted problem in not just sport but in society. Down the years, it's only really in the last 10, 15 years that we felt that LGBT equality has made such great strides. But because there's no great evidence of that, certainly in football, which is, as we know, the most popular sport in this country, there's greater evidence of it elsewhere in British sport, particularly women's football. I say football, I'm talking about the men's game, but the women's game is obviously a great example of the progress that can be made. I think there's just a lack of LGBT visibility, not just on the pitch, but just throughout the game. So that's at all levels. It's one of the great things we've had over here in recent years is the rise of LGBT fan groups at the big football clubs and all the way down the football pyramid in this country. So that's giving LGBT visibility in football on the terraces from the fans. And I think we'd like to see more people at all levels of the game coming out if they are LGBT and feeling able to do that, because the environment is so much more conducive for them to be able to do that. And I think that's why Ryan's story has really struck a chord over here, because there is a great interest in whether or not there are gay footballers at various levels of the game and their reasons for not coming out. But it's not about gay players. The whole Rainbow Laces campaign and focus in this country is not about gay players. It's about everyone involved in sport being in an environment where they're able to be themselves and be more successful because they are authentic people, living their lives openly and not worried about this overriding threat of homophobia that is talked about, but manifests itself, in various ways. And ultimately, it is a minority that hold these homophobic opinions and make themselves heard, and it's not the overriding feeling in British sport.
Well, it was interesting that the idea of the fan groups, because I think fans over there are more organized than they are in the U.S. I mean, we don't have anything, at least at the pro level, they do maybe in college, of like the kind of chants and how fans will sing an entire game and they have these songs that go back 100 years. And I think there had been examples, more like 15 years ago where I forget his last name, his first name was Graham, and he was a player that everyone assumed was gay even though he wasn't, and they would really like have these organized chants at opposing things. So it seemed to me that getting LGBT fans public and visible is a way to sort of say the fan base has changed. You're not going to hear these kind of hopefully crude kind of overt comments if a player were to come out as gay, because you'd have sort of a group of people in the stands who themselves are LGBT and who would kind of counteract that. Am I being off base on that? Or
no, I think you're spot on. The player you're referring to, Graham Lassau, so he was
yes,
an England
yes.
international, played for Chelsea, and yes, he was a victim of homophobic abuse. So that had manifested itself like on the pitch. An opposition player, Robbie Fowler, was quite a famous incident in English football. But this is going back, as I say, like over sort of 10
yeah,
15
like
years
15
ago.
Yeah, 15 years,
and,
yeah.
I just think, it just shows the progress that we've made in terms of LGBT equality in this country, that such an incident now would horrify the vast majority of people, because there was no real reaction to it from the authorities when it happened 10, 15 years ago. I can't remember the exact date. It was just kind of accepted because it was an example of just a way for an opposition player to get one up on his opponent. And it wasn't seen as being, particularly damaging at the time. Now, I think everyone looks back on that incident with great, great disappointment that it wasn't tackled more effectively at the time. So, but I think what we're seeing now in terms of homophobia and how it manifests itself I think it is that social media level where people, you know, obviously hiding behind anonymous profiles, etc., and they're directing abuse at players on social media. You know, for example, we have, you know, goal celebrations over here in the Premier League, and it's quite common to see, you know, opposition fans or etc. taunting players like on social media and mocking their actions on the field and calling them gay or other pejorative terms. You know, this is how homophobia is manifesting itself now. But it's really visible because it's out there on social media and everyone can see it. But it isn't by any stretch the overriding feeling of fans and supporters in this country. They are very much supportive of their players, particularly obviously players on their own team, and they will be 100% behind a player if he were to come out in the future.
So John, one last question, and I just want to kind of slightly change topics before we let you go. The last couple of months, we've seen several players in several professional athletes in the United States in baseball and hockey use gay slurs during games, and Major League Baseball has hit them with 2-game suspensions each time, and the National Hockey League offered no suspension whatsoever. What is your feeling on the effectiveness of using suspensions? I know people talk about education and making sure the person understands what they did wrong, but what is your feeling about the use of punishment and suspensions and taking matches away from athletes who use this kind of language? Is it an effective way for leagues to send a message?
I think it's only effective when both of those elements are combined together. So I think, yes, there does have to be a suspension, and depending on the severity of the offence, that will determine the length of the suspension. But also education, you know, is a huge part of the process. And I think we've seen two different examples over here in the UK, certainly in the last 18 months or so, one of which involved a player who had tweeted the word faggots in relation to a match he was watching on TV. And he was called out on that, obviously on social media at the time, but he was also punished by the FA with a short ban. I think it was 1 or 2 games, but a fine and an education course. And the other example would be a more high-profile player at the time was Andre Gray, a striker who's recently transferred from Burnley to Watford. So he was playing for Burnley, scored against Liverpool. And as a result of the focus on him, it was discovered that there were these tweets going back on his timeline historically where he'd made some really abhorrent Twitter posts about gay people. Some of the worst, you know, really horrifying stuff. And he was appropriately punished. He had a much longer ban, 6 games, I think it was. A bigger fine and also the education course. So one thing we do know is certainly the Coventry player, Chris Stokes, he gave an interview to the FA talking about the process after it had been completed and expressing his regret and how useful the education course had been. And I think that was really, really useful in showing like the good work that the FA are doing in terms of trying not only to show that it will not be tolerated, but also, you know, trying to find out the reasons why it still happens. And educating players on the need for them to be much more aware of the impact that their actions and words can have, and basically just trying to bring them up to speed on an important part of society that for whatever reason they haven't been able to get right yet.
Well, John, I have one more question if we have time, Sid, for one more question.
Sure.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah. Do you, given the notorious reputation of the English tabloids, do you think media would ever out an athlete? I don't think they would in the U.S. Do you think is that a concern at all, or do they even have too much respect for doing something like that?
No, I think those days are fortunately behind us. I'd feel mm-hmm. very, you know, I think everyone in this country would be very surprised if a tabloid newspaper, you know, outed anyone, not just a sportsman, because I think there is a recognition now that is, you know, obviously a private, personal part of a person's identity, if that's the decision that they've made about their sexuality. I certainly don't think that we shouldn't. There are some people who would argue that a person's sexuality shouldn't be reported upon, but I certainly wouldn't agree with that. I think there's reasons why people should be able to live openly if they choose to.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like to think that the progress we've made in this country would be reflected in the fact that, say, a newspaper would certainly not out someone. I just don't think it would happen anymore.
And also, these publications also have openly LGBT editors, reporters who would probably push back if something like that were to happen, I'm assuming.
Absolutely, and lawyers as well.
That's true. You have a lot harder libel laws than we do in the U.S.
Absolutely, and if someone's privacy, you know, had been invaded in such a way that and splashed across the pages of a tabloid newspaper, I think due to the certainly in recent years has been, you know, the Leveson inquiry over here and a lot more focus on the freedom of the press and the damage that intrusive press activity can have on a person's life. I think that whichever newspaper was responsible for that, I think the authorities would come down on them like a ton of bricks.
Well, John, thank you so much for joining us. It was great to meet you a few months ago, and I'm glad we're able to connect. We'll keep watching what you and Sky Sports are doing with LGBT athletes. Again, John is on Twitter at JONBOY79, and go Plymouth.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, Sid, and thanks again for all the great work that you guys do. It's a great inspiration to us over here in the UK.
All right, well, take care. Well, that was John Holmes from Sky Sports, and we ran a little over because, of course, more technical difficulties getting him on. No, by no fault of his, by every fault of stupid Blog Talk right now. Jim, any closing thoughts before we finish out here? Anything on the Matt Joyce suspension?
I mean, I think two games seems fine, two or three games, and they acted quickly, and I think that's what has to be done. I think suspensions do matter. Time loss means more than just a simple fine, and it has to be at least multiple games. I think the Escobar getting three games a couple years ago from the Blue Jays, I think that because that was a provocative act where he wrote a gay slur in Spanish and I black. These were kind of, you know, burst of anger and two games. It just seemed right to me. I was not bothered by it, and
yeah.
The actions were quick. And
yeah.
Apparently Matt Joyce was really beside himself that he said that.
Yeah. Well, but what's funny is the suspension was handed out Saturday morning. It was over by Sunday night, so, but that's baseball. That's all the time we have this week. We will talk to you next week.